Matthew, do we want to take audience Q&A? I think we've gone longer than says on my paper. Okay. Do you want to come up and take the mic and give your question?
Richard Lowenberg, and a little bit of, like most of us, involvement in these ideas and hopefully implementation as well. This inspires thoughts about, I think, maybe different words than yours about the two stories. I think the big issue that is context for this is, well, first of all, last week was a demarcation for this year of global overshoot. We're in ecological debt for the rest of this year. We cannot replenish what we've used so far. Anything beyond today is overshoot. We're getting further and further in that direction. We practice around the world primarily political economics, socialism, communism, capitalism, the isms. What we really need to do in the other story is earth economics. We live on a planet. We're using its resources. Some are finite, some are not. We have to understand the value and the cost of material resources and what our current economies call tangibles and, or intangibles and externalities. And it's those non-material things that determine quality of life. And we're not addressing those. And those need to be, I think, the wonderful creative arts or just creative challenge we face as a society that we're not taking on is, how do we get from here to where we want to go? To quality of life and the systems that will support that. That's a wonderful social design agenda, and we're not implementing it. I think we could do that because localism is important. We should be doing that here. We should be bringing these things together and others and really consciously designing and creating, trial and error, making little mistakes, how it can work here. Or in other little places. I think that's the agenda for the future. Thanks.
Does anybody else have a question? Come on.
Thank you. My name's Nina Mastrangelo, and my question pertains to something that a lot of you touched on, and that's education today, which I think is really, really scary. I've been an educator at all different levels, and we're using, and you talked about it when you used the word money, but you also talked about quantifying things. And right now, we're quantifying education at the lowest level, and now that I have a student applying to college, and I'm also talking to admission people, and I'm talking to faculty, and I'm finding that the admission people are almost in a game where they're trying to find the highest stake people, and they're not even looking at what the college's mission is. We're losing sight of mission, I guess I'm saying. And I just like to know, I find it a really huge crisis, because what you talked about that technology all the time, it's like the button is pressed on our students so that they're in constant crisis mode for learning and being tested. And they don't even have time to soak things in or to think creatively. So that almost seems like something that has to be addressed so that everything you're talking about can be addressed. And I would love to hear any of your creative thoughts on a high level so that we can bust out of this, because it just does seem.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I want to know what you think about that question, because I can't imagine that in the way that you hold it in your heart and soul that you haven't seen moments of, oh, that's a beautiful thing, and you know, truth is beauty, beauty, truth. You know, you've seen some beautiful things in the system that might be replicated. Can you think of something to offer? Because you certainly are right there on the ground.
Okay, I have seen and heard beautiful things from teachers that are allowed to teach from their heart. And it's getting harder and harder for them to be allowed to do that.
So where is the is the sort of relentless oversight, measurement, scoring, methodology, which is, that you said, like the lowest common denominator for understanding what education is for or about, that crimps the ability of teachers, many of whom feel called, to really blossom and bring their gift to the table.
Right. I've seen that and felt that. But even bigger than that, it's top down right now, the education system. And it's sort of like, why are we teaching them what we're teaching them? It's almost like there's no reasoning behind it. Yeah, and I would love to hear any genius or any any concepts that you have that are related to projects you're working on that can address that on a global or national level.
Carmen, you have something to say. I just want to say, as a response to something that you just mentioned, which is the word genius, the more time goes on, the more I see that, you know, so-called genius is people thinking together. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a nice way of thinking about it. Of when I have worked with teachers in the classroom or in their classrooms, what I find is missing at all levels of the system from teachers' experiences, any kind of respect for their knowledge. So when you do something that counters teachers' instincts, when you measure things that teachers know to be unimportant, when you test students and don't share the results with teachers until the following fall when those students are no longer in their classroom, all of that is unhelpful. It wastes students' time. It devalues teachers. I mean, what needs to happen is figuring out how to work with students to teach them how to learn the things that we send our kids to school for. We want our kids to be able to interact with other children. We want them to be helpful. We want them to be fair. We want them to be good people. We want them to participate. We want them to be able to read. We want them to be able to do math. We want them to be curious. And the further away we get from you know, a shared understanding of what the purpose of education is, the closer we get to 27 weeks a year of testing and evaluating teachers based on test scores of subjects that they didn't teach to students that they no longer have in front of them. That is the extreme of nonsense of what's happening in Albuquerque and in other places around the state and then around the country. That evaluating people based on values that you don't have, based on data that you don't care about, then you have to ask yourself, why are we doing that?
Well, it speaks to something you were talking about a moment ago, which is seeing students as basically economic units, as data points, as potential customers or whatever, as opposed to little souls who are participating in a society.
There was a point at which we, as a culture, protected students from companies. And now we post billboards on the side of buses, and we stream advertising into the classroom on television stations that that companies pay for. We give testing companies and curriculum companies the most insane amount of access to our students. And that is, at its core, the opposite of what democracy is. That the reason that we send our children to school is because there are values that we want them to espouse, and we want them to be able to participate in the world. And I think that part of building a democracy, part of fostering democracy, is us fighting with the schools and us fighting with the people that are making decisions about what is happening in schools, to make sure that schools look the way we think that they need to look. Like, we have to fight with our politicians. We have to fight with our elected officials. We have to fight with all of the people that make decisions and make sure that what's happening in schools reflects our values. And I think the other thing that's really problematic is the lack of the sort of devaluation of parents that has come with the devaluation of teachers, of not inviting parents into the school to see what's going on and telling parents that that they don't understand what's, you know, that they're not smart enough to understand what's going on, or that that they're not sufficiently educated in the right kinds of ways so that they can't weigh in on what's happening. Like, parents should be able to say, no, I want my children to be able to go outside for 10 minutes every day.
Or an hour.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a great thing if people demanded 10 minutes to start. It would be great if they demanded an hour. But, you know, I mean, Veronica Garcia, the former Secretary of Education, fought really hard to get PE and art back into the schools. And that has been rolled back in so many cases, that parents in Peñasco a couple years ago fought with the principal about, you know, their kids not being able to go outside. I mean, it's Peñasco in the spring.
Yeah.
Really, you want your children to go inside at 8 a.m. and be there until 4 p.m. and not ever see the sky or the green? You want your children to have a relationship with the outdoors. So, I mean, valuing the local knowledge, being willing to fight for and stand up for your kids, whether you're parents, whether you're teachers, whether you're outsiders and you don't have kids in the school, I mean, this is how we're educating the next generation.
Are there any other questions or comments? Okay, let's take two more, and then we can all maybe talk among ourselves and hang out. There seem to be some nice beverages and stuff like that.
I'm Sue Beggy. I think this is most pertinent for Carmen and Bianca, but have you come across any legislation that may or may not have been written by lobbyists who are in the employ of the corporations that you're kind of battling here, the banking industry, the public utility industry, that have gotten in your way of becoming a player in these fields?
Mine's really short. Mine is, no, I haven't. So for public banking, no. So this is an idea that is in the process of being implemented, and the obstacles from the large banking world have not come forward yet.
Maybe they don't believe that you're a threat yet.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yes. I mean, so we have a regulated monopoly system here in New Mexico that is on the books that prevents us from being able to choose other energy providers. And those regulations have absolutely been constructed in concert with the utility that benefits from them. In terms of municipalization, we didn't really have a chance to like go into our specific methods of how we're pursuing the various things that we're pursuing, but we're having to pursue municipalization in a creative way because we see that using the power of eminent domain to try to seize the infrastructure of a utility has cost a community like Boulder $13 million so far in legal costs as they're battling Xcel. And so there's all kinds of ways that things are set up so that communities can't exercise their rights to live by their values in the case of energy. And in places where those barriers don't exist, that legislation doesn't exist, or rather people have fought successfully to, basically challenge those statutes. In California and Illinois are two examples. We see communities, like I was saying earlier, that are able to power themselves with 100% renewables because they actually get to choose the energy that they want. So, you know, right now the politics are what they are in New Mexico, and PNM is a very close friend with many of our elected officials, and so it's hard to operate at the state level to create solutions right now, and so we're having to pursue them at a smaller scale, but I feel like we can create a wedge in the system, and I think that's what local communities can do in all kinds of ways, is to create those examples of defiance, and then, you know, we might get in trouble for it. Truly, we might get in trouble for it, but those fights are the fights that are worth bringing on, you know, so that we can raise the real issues. But absolutely, and I'm happy to share in more detail. I don't want to bore everyone with the technical stuff, but there are many examples of actual legislation that prevent us from moving forward at a state level.
One more question, person in back.
I'd just like to say that maybe you
could give you 2 seconds. Can you come in? I know, but we might put you on the radio, Nate.
Sorry. Okay. My name is Nate Downey. And I just wanted to say that although we've heard a lot about crisis this evening, and there are certainly pending crises, I'm really impressed by how far we've come since I first realized about this crisis back in the 80s. Almost all the hands went up when the question was raised, is anybody a gardener here? And the whole local food movement has taken off much faster than I think anybody here probably ever expected 15, 20 years ago. And so if we have that kind of progress, and the same with the solar industry, if we have that kind of progress in other issues as well, we could succeed. We could get places.
Thank you, Economologies and Axel Contemporary and everybody. And can we just hang out, or do we have to go home, Sanji?
We've got to wrap things up in a little bit.
Okay, well, let's wrap things up in a little bit. Everybody, thank you for coming.
Thank you.